Humboldt Holding Up is brought to you by Los Bagels, one of our local businesses who have totally been holding it down during the pandemic. Right now, they're open 7 days a week in both Arcata and Eureka. They've got fresh baked bagels, pastries, delicious coffee and espresso drinks. They offer outdoor seating at both locations now so you can stay distant and safe while still eating someplace other than your own house. Amazing. Check out Los Bagels, open 7 to 2 daily at 1061 I Street in Arcata and 403 2nd Street in Old Town Eureka. Happy Humboldt, everyone. It's Humboldt Holding Up, the Lost Coast Outpost. Adventure in podcasting. I'm Stephanie McGarry.
And I'm Andrew Goff. Hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving and didn't do anything ridiculous.
I guess I'm just going to ask what you did for Thanksgiving, but we're actually recording this before Thanksgiving.
You're revealing the magic. Just a reminder that if you have not, you can subscribe to Humboldt Holding Up on iTunes, and if you're the kind of person that likes to advertise on local podcasts, you can email advertising@lostcoastoutpost.com, and someone will help you with that dream of yours.
Yes, except don't email advertising@lostcoastoutpost.com because it's advertise@lostcoastoutpost.com.
See, I actually knew I was saying the wrong thing, but I wanted to get this really into people's brains.
Exactly. advertise@lostcoastoutpost.
Today on the show, it is the second part of our Better Know a Newly Elected Eureka City Council Member. Last week we did Scott Bauer, and this week we have Katie Moulton, sometimes known as Katie Texas, but for the sake of politics, we'll call her Katie Moulton. And in fact, we will ask her about why the public name change.
She's going to be a fun city council member, right?
Yeah. Let's find out. Katie, let's get her in here. Katie, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yeah, you're in.
Oh, yeah.
You're in a white void.
Yeah. Best place to Zoom. Yeah. It's the only clean spot in my house, this one right here.
That frame.
Yeah. I have a three-year-old, so mostly it's just sweeping away the piles of Hot Wheels. Just winning
yes,
through them.
That's, I was just talking about this to Andrew, wondering if
child,
you were a
childless
a
Andrew.
Yeah. I have a one-year-old myself.
Oh. So. Let's officially kick things off here with Katie Moulton, who is the presumptive winner of Eureka's second ward's seat on the city council. And we'll say, just so our listeners know where we're at with this election, the results have not been officially certified. There are very small number of votes out there left to be counted. But you, Katie, are ahead of your closest competitor by 16 percentage points at last count. So that feels, like enough of a lead for us to extend a realist's congratulations to you. Well done.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Now I want to start with your decision to run, which I happen to know came down to the wire. You were still mulling whether or not you were going to go for this on the filing deadline day. What tipped your decision?
As soon as the other candidates started announcing their candidacy, it became real clear that there wasn't a progressive candidate in the running. And my progressive friends just started texting me about it. Just as soon as there was a press conference, people were like, you ever considered running for public office? And I said, no.
Okay.
Never. And I happen to have been right in the middle of a really big, heartbreaking project. Earlier this year, I left my longtime job at the Ing People Center for the Arts that I love so, so much to take over as director of Scrap Humboldt, which for me was like just the dream job. It combined creative reuse and like ecological responsibility with art and funky fun and community service and just like everything I wanted to do. And then the pandemic happened, and long story short, in the end of August, I was in the middle of closing everything down. I was like right at the stage of the store is closed, everything's gone. I'm like sweeping the walls. I was exhausted, completely drained. And I had had this idea, you know, I said, well, maybe I'll run, maybe I won't. If there's another candidate that would, that I can get behind, and maybe I'll just throw support behind them. And usually when the incumbent isn't running, there's an extra 5 days on the deadline, which was reported somewhere. And then I sort of took that, you know, and we all glanced at the election site and saw that that is in fact the case. And then I think it was probably the day of the deadline when Leslie Castellano, a council member and friend of mine and fellow Ink People person, actually called the city clerk and asked. And it turns out that there was not an extension on the deadline, and we now had 4 hours basically to get the paperwork in, which includes writing and turning in a candidate statement, and also getting 22 or 20, some right around 20 signatures of registered voters in the ward.
I think they recommend you get a few more because some always come back as not valid. Anyway.
Sure. So, you know, Leslie called as I'm in the middle of sweeping scrap, like cobwebs in my hair. And she says, like, today's the day. If you're going to do it, you have to do it now. So I called my husband. We'd already sort of been chatting about it. And I was looking forward to the week after I was totally put scrap to bed to, like, take a bath. You know, just like, not that I hadn't been bathing, but, you know, take a bath. Like, take a moment about it and think. And here I'm calling him. I'm like, we have to make a decision now. He's like, what? I thought you had a week. So, you know, I was leaning towards doing it anyway. It's just the kind of thing that I like to do, not being in politics, but connecting people with opportunities or connecting folks that might not be engaged otherwise with something that can benefit them. I can tell you more about my work history, but essentially that's kind of like the stuff I do. I help take people who don't think they have anything that can be done and go like, look, here's this awesome thing that can happen. And, you know, like leading horses to water and seeing what I can, seeing what they'll do with it once they get there. So the deadline was 5 p.m. I've decided, my husband and I decided that we're going to go ahead and like go for it because this is going to add responsibility to him. You know, like, taking care of house and child things. And I told the folks that were helping to clean up scrap, I'm like, good luck, bye. Got in the car. And I was driving back to Eureka from Arcata, dictating my candidate statement into my phone while I was driving. Meanwhile, Leslie Castellano is running around the second ward, calling people, knocking on doors, getting those signatures together. And we met up at City Hall at like, I'm out in the van at 4:55, I'm finishing my paperwork, and the city clerk opens the door to the city hall, and she's like, get in the building! Like, what? She's like, do you know what time it is? Like, okay. Gathered up my stuff, and I ran in the building, and like, you know, 1 minute before midnight, Leslie comes through the door with the signatures, everything goes in a pile. I was like, okay. Thank goodness we had all the paperwork straightened out. And there we go. I was on the ballot and had a candidate statement that was my first draft.
That's amazing.
I mean that says something about your ability to accomplish things under pressure, right?
Yeah.
Definitely. Oh, good.
It was making me sweat, like hearing this story. I was getting the nervous deadline feeling, like, and I remember a little bit following that too, that we knew that Leslie was doing that, like rushing to get the signatures, and that we had also just learned that in fact the deadline was that day because of the council members not being eligible to rerun, I think was the reason.
It had to do with the way the voting change happened in Eureka, the election before, where now you have to live in the ward and only the people in the ward vote for you. So it used to be you had to live in the ward, but everybody in Eureka voted for everybody. But they had, since they made it so you can only the people in your ward vote for you, they had to even it out, right? You had to be the same number of people or roughly the same number of people. So the districts got redrawn. Heidi Messner was not eligible to run because she no longer lives here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a confession for you, which is that while I've known you for years, it wasn't until this election that I knew your actual last name was Moulton. You've obviously been heavily involved in this community for years, but it's always been under your, I guess, artist name of Katie Texas.
We'll call it a nom de plume.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you to get ridiculously philosophical right now, if you like. Who is Katie Texas, and how is she different from Katie Moulton?
Oh, what a great question. I did know that most of the people who know me, or any reputation that I might have, or any like strength and support that I might have, was for a person called Katie Texas. And in that like fevered last minute moment there in the lobby of City Hall, turning in my paperwork, I had the option of choosing whatever name I wanted put on the ballot.
Oh, really? Okay.
That's my understanding, is you can run under, you know, it doesn't have to be your legal name.
Well, as we know,
there's all these different like entities and definitions, and you have to have a committee, and you have to have a legal name, and then you have your ballot name. So like if I wanted, you know, like if my name was Catherine and I wanted to be Kate, I could run under Kate. You know what I mean?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how far that goes, if I could run under like, I don't know, Big Baby Jesus or something. But yeah. I thought for a second, and it was a second, about running as Katie Texas. And then I just had this moment where I thought, somebody's going to see that and think of this as performance art.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-huh. And I wanted to make sure that, like, this isn't, you know, Katie Texas that ran an all naked kinetic team. This is, well, I'm still that person. Yeah. This is like the side of me that that lives here. I've got like a mortgage and a kid, and I live in this neighborhood in the city, and I want to do what I can to make things like better and a better place that I want to live. Which, you know, may or may not involve painting or giant sculptures. It's going to involve the more boring side of things, which tap on my skills of, I think, communication and coordination, you know?
That's
basically what it is. I didn't want people to think it was performance art.
Yeah. So it's not, you're not trying to distance yourself from any past or anything you've done in your past, which, why would you? It's all, you've been, I don't know, doing good, fun work in the community for a long time.
I'm having fun.
Yeah, as you said, you just admitted that you ran an all naked kinetics team. So why? It's like, clearly you're not hiding from that. So yeah,
I missed that. Okay.
I was wondering when I talked to Leslie early in the process, I had a long conversation with her about the commitment. Like, what does the job actually entail? How many hours a week are we talking about? Like, what am I getting myself into? And part of that conversation was about when you're campaigning, when you're running. You know, the haters gonna hate, they're gonna bring up stuff. And, you know, she kind of pointed out a few things that were said about her. And some things are like the truth, but twisted in a way that makes you look real bad. And some things are just like straight up lies, or just, you know, complete fabrications. And yeah. I was curious, what are people gonna come up with? Like, what is something, like, there's pictures of me on the internet, and I appear nude, you know, like in public, or with a very giant fake butt, or, you know, wrestling in Jell-O, eating a severed leg, like, you know, like,
yes.
But then again, it's Humboldt County, it's Eureka. These things might not hurt you. They might not. So.
Well, as I say, I mean, you're a former rutabaga queen, but you're not even the first rutabaga queen on the council currently.
No, there isn't. Okay. First, let me just real quick. Once a queen, always a queen. There's no such thing as a former root of the
I'm sorry. Queen. Yes, I. Okay, your highness. Yeah. I apologize. Okay.
yeah. No, Queen Jima beat me to it by years. Yeah. Natalie Arroyo, pride of the rutabagas.
Yeah. I'm curious a little bit. What about the name Katie Texas? Why Katie Texas?
Because I'm from Katie, Texas.
Oh, okay.
It's just that simple.
Okay, you're from
old Katie.
You're from Texas.
Yeah, I'm. Katie is a suburb of Houston. Mm-hmm. I grew up in and around Houston, and like Spring, Klein, Katie, like that. It's sort of like concentric circles of city, Houston.
Okay. Yeah. So then, what brought you to Humboldt?
Well, I had been back in Houston. A friend of mine had put together a festival, a May Day festival for International Labor Day. And I was a theater major, and I decided that my contribution to that would be a one-woman play that I had done excerpts from in high school. It was played by Jessica Litwack, called Emma Goldman, Love, Anarchy, and Other Affairs. And it's like this one-woman monologue with Emma Goldman, who is a firebrand activist, writer, one of those people who went and stood on soapboxes and stirred up revolution around the Industrial Revolution. Yeah. And this was the story of the funny thing is, the play takes place. Hold on, I'm going to step back a second. So I did this play for this festival, and then I was looking for a way to travel that summer, and I decided to just take the play on tour. So it was like me, a violin player, and a box full of props in my station wagon. I booked shows on a website called Book Your Own Damn Life, and there's an organization called Placebo. It's an all-ages venue booking group that's still sort of vaguely operates as an Ink People program. Yeah. And they, a fella named Willoughby with the Placebo booked me to do my play here. We did 12 shows in 2 weeks, starting in San Diego, went up to Bellingham, Washington. This was by far my favorite stop on the entire West Coast. I'd done some traveling, but not a lot. And then that was my first trip to the West Coast. And I fell in love with Humboldt so much. I pulled into town at sunset. I did my play in a barn at the Salmon House in the Arcata Bottoms with like hay bales with quilts on them and like gas lanterns. And there was 100 people there. It was crazy. It was the best show on the tour. And then that night, my host, Willoughby, took myself and my violin player, Veronica, up to Horse Mountain to watch the Leonids. And I'm a city girl. I grew up in the suburbs. I grew up in a place where when you look up, you don't see stars. You see orange because that's just, I never saw a tree without a fence around it, and I was just blown away. And we got up the next day and, I kind of went off on my own, and my friend and I went to the beach. And then I got a call from the director of the theater program at HSU. And she said, she talked to somebody who saw the play and talked to Arcata Main Street and asked if I would do my play again on the plaza. Well, the play is the story of Emma Goldman. And she's telling this story while she's in hiding in an apartment in Chicago because she is being deported. They're trying to catch her because someone, a man named Leonard Czolgosz, tried to assassinate President McKinley. And he said, Emma Goldman told me to do it, which was more like he went to a rally and Emma Goldman fired up the crowd. And so he took that as a directive, and he tried to assassinate the president. He implicated Emma Goldman. So the cops are chasing her. She's hiding in this apartment. And that's when she's telling this story. So then I did this play on the plaza, McKinley right over my shoulder.
Wow.
That was pretty cool.
And that particular McKinley has subsequently been assassinated also. So
that one's not there anymore either. Yeah. I outlasted him.
Yeah. That's incredible. What a story.
What year was that? What year was that that this all took place?
That was late summer 2002. And I told Willoughby, I was like, this place is awesome. I'm moving here. And he's like, oh yeah, everybody says that. all the people say that. I was like, give me a month. So I took 6 months. I, sold half my stuff, gave the other half away. I came up here, me and my 1979 Ford F-150 and a cat, and, just rolled into town and decided this is where I wanted to be. I've been here ever since.
Man, that's amazing. I remember the Salmon House. It's like all these things you were saying. I'm like, oh man, I used to live not that far, and I went to shows there all the time. They always had the best Halloween party.
Oh my God. I was just thinking about the Salmon House Halloween party. So I show up in town in Humboldt. I know one person. It's this guy, Willoughby, who booked my show. Fortunately, he's somebody who knows absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
And he would like He knew I was new in town and didn't know anybody. So he was always like, you know, come see the show, come do this, come do that. And he invited me to a painting class that he was going to on the weekend, which happened to be the Rural Borough Mural Bureau with Dwayne Flatmo. So within 2 weeks of landing here, I was painting murals with Dwayne Flatmo. We're making all these masks. I got to be on his kinetic team that very first year. That was 2003. And I remember in class, we were making Halloween masks. And I was really annoyed at the time with the, my Halloween costume is a sexy blank, like trend. Mm-hmm. So I set out to make the least sexy costume I could possibly think of. So I made a giant radioactive drooling baby. And so I had this big baby, so I had this huge head, and we went to the Salmon House Halloween party, but I couldn't go inside because I couldn't fit through the door.
Oh, wow.
I just stood outside going, ah!
Wow.
Was that freaking people out, going, bird control!
Oh, man. Nice. Well, getting back a little bit to Katie Moulton and, you know, running for this council position, we had the other Award 4 winner, Scott Bauer, on last week, and we were talking to him a little bit about his experience campaigning, you know, during COVID, which has obviously been a very different experience than would be usual. And the main thing he attributed to his win was just getting out there and walking in his ward. You know, he said he went to every house in his ward. He had even a very funny story about getting attacked by a cat when he did it. So, you know, we're just wondering about you, you know, what was your approach, you know, to ensuring that you got your message out here to people in the community during this time?
Yeah. You know, we had a lot of conversations about door knocking and whether or not I felt like it was safe, whether or not my family felt safe with me doing that and then coming home, you know, whether fine, go live in the garage, whether or not people would find it an intrusion. You know, like more so than usual. I mean, somebody knocking on your door, like that could be a little annoying, but then you find out they're running for city council and it's like, oh, good, you're taking the time to actually come talk to me. Awesome. Yeah. But are people going to be like, ah, get back? Like, even if you show up in a mask, even so. Mostly what I did as far as like physical outreach involved literature drops, no contact drops. And then if people wanted to talk to me, I kind of like put that out there and they would say, you know, come knock on the door when you drop that off. I'd love to meet you. And I did meet a few people that way. I met a few people just who happened to be out, you know, yard sailing or walking their dogs while I was out putting flyers up and around. For the most part, though, I'd say our strategy was purely online. And, you know, we're advertising online, we're doing all the social media things and just trying to connect directly with people, you know, in the palm of their hand, as opposed to at their front door. And I did get into a lot of really good conversations, met some good people, met some, found out more about what people's concerns are, and more about some specific like things that I probably wouldn't have looked into if folks didn't bring it up. And I think part of our strategy had to do with connecting with unlikely voters. There's a whole generation of folks who have never seen a copy of the Time Standard, and but they've got, you know, Snapchat on, and they that those folks are voting age and important. Yeah. And it's important for them to get engaged in local politics, or at least aware of local politics and what it's capable of, or how it affects their life. And you know, those are the folks that are online. So while not dismissing people who, you know, just want a visitor, I think reaching out to people who might not be connected in that way, or might connect better online, was a benefit for sure. Also, I'm kind of in like web marketing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know,
you're savvy.
Yeah.
Nice. You were mentioning, I mean, some of the things you were saying, people brought up some concerns and maybe some things that you might not have looked into before. What have you, what has been some of the biggest concerns that maybe you didn't expect of the constituents?
Well, the biggest concerns are going to be the things that you expect, like you already know. There's the second ward encompasses some of the poorest neighborhoods in town. The symptoms of poverty manifest in a lot of ways, and those are the things that people are most concerned about: safety and health, and the safety of their bodies and their families and their property. You know, that's what people are mostly concerned about. A lot of people had a lot to say about the Jacobs campus over here in Second Ward. We have the school that, if you only pass by it once a week, it looks like a big abandoned building. If you look more deeply into it, there's actually a lot going on. So that was an education, just what's happening at Jacobs. And comparing that to what everybody thinks is happening at Jacobs. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I think the stuff that got brought up to me would be more things that were brought up to me by the labor unions or the PACs, people who wanted to give me an endorsement. The endorsement process is crazy. Well, not crazy. It's in depth. I had no idea. But when they wanted to give you an endorsement, they give you a list of questions. You know, how do you feel about this? What do you think about this? You know, and they list very specific legislature or very specific things that happen, and they want my opinion about it. And it led me to take a crash course in California political science, is what it did. So I got dug into a lot of things that I wouldn't have considered otherwise.
Yeah.
And then also people wanted my opinion about the ballot, like everything that was on the ballot.
The props.
So I was already, you know, hopefully going to try and be informed about the different propositions, but it just led me to get informed in that like extra level of I might have to teach this, you know, knowing what I want to know and knowing what my opinion is about something is like one level below. I'm going to have to try and present this to somebody in a way that they can in a way that anyone can understand, but that is not, that, you know, presents evidence or facts without it being like, I think you should do this. More like, here's what this actually means. I have an opinion. What's your opinion?
Yeah.
I'm curious. You mentioned the Jacobs School campus, you know, just being an issue of concern for people in that neighborhood. What specifically? I mean, I think my perception of it is that, you know, it's probably like homeless people are living there sometimes, or is that not correct? Or,
well, yeah, anytime you have, I mean, no, that's not what's happening, but anytime you have a void, what goes into that void is usually something that wants to happen in the dark. It's why I support just sunlight wherever you can get it. So yeah, folks are concerned that there's squatters in there, that people are going in there to use or abuse drugs, that they're selling, that there might be other more nefarious things going on in there, or that it's just a health hazard in general to the community, and it's a blight. I mean, it's ugly. It's ugly and fallen down, and if you were to just glance at it, all you see is this big like. What it said to me when I see it, when I saw it before I really learned what was going on, I saw, here's this big thing in the middle of our neighborhood that somebody owns and they don't care about, which means they don't care about us. That it's fine for this big rotting thing to be like part of my part of the community. When other campuses or other things are getting the resources, you know, why this? Why let that rot here? Yeah. And that feels directed, you know, or it feels like dismissive of our little section. And what I learned is that there is actually quite a lot going on in there, that it is a big complicated situation, that the campus, so you have Jacobs campus is right there next to Alice Birney, functioning school, totally running, kids going in there. And then connected with all those wonderful fields, all the sports fields.
Yeah.
And that the city schools owns all of that together. and that basically the student population no longer justified that being opened as a school. There wasn't enough kids in town.
Sure.
So get rid of it, right? Sell it? Why not? Well, there's really strict rules about where they can sell it, when they can sell it, under what conditions they can sell it, how many different sorts of organizations they have to offer it to before they can sell it. Mm. Like we've been talking, the Neighborhood Alliance over here have been talking about the CHP, the Highway Patrol, possibly buying it and using it as a headquarters. It's much bigger than their existing one. Right. And that's a great idea. And it was definitely something they were getting feedback from the neighborhood about. But that's about 10 steps down the line of possibilities and how many different agencies they have to even offer it to before that. Mm. So let's, and then if there were a big population surge in Eureka, which is happening right now.
Right. People are fleeing.
We might need another school. Yeah. We might suddenly find ourselves with overcrowded schools and we need another campus inside the city limits. And that's the only one. That's the only space left inside the city limits of Eureka that's even close to big enough to be another like effective school, to be another middle school or a big elementary school. So if they were to sell the land and then suddenly they needed it, then what do they do? Now you've just sold this thing that, but they need it. Of course, the building itself can't be used in the condition that it's in. There's subsidence in there. I know some of it's falling down. And I think the more concerning thing there is that it is actually a building that has hazardous materials in it, like asbestos and other things that require specialized, we call it abatement. Mm-hmm. So what has happened, or what I learned has happened, is that before the maintenance money was going to active schools that were running, you know, you've got kids in the building, that building has to be safe first. And but now the there is actually school maintenance money going to the Jacobs campus to take care of the most dangerous thing first. This is all my impression. This is all like what I've learned. So if you want real like, if you want like this, the most solid of solid facts, go talk to the schools themselves. But the first thing they seem to be doing is sending crews in there and taking care of the dangerous stuff, getting the asbestos out of there. And they're doing something which I think is just super smart for the city to be doing, which is coordinating the efforts of existing agencies. There's a group over there that's doing security. So these volunteer job training guys, I forget the name of the program, but basically they have on-site security 24/7. So no, there aren't squats inside of the building. There is not a black hole or a void over there that is being filled with illegal activities. If you were just to look by at, you know, from the street on a given day, that looks like what's happening. But it turns out that, you know, it's a complicated situation. It is being taken care of, but from the inside out, because the inside is where the dangerous stuff is. And there are eyeballs on the property at all times. So I feel much better about it, just like knowing all of that, even though you can't see any of it happening, that information is there. And I feel better knowing that that's all going on and that there's like progress.
I only said that one thing about there being potential homeless issues, because I feel like the last time I was there, it was probably 2 or 3 years ago now, but it was for a Humble Bay Fire got called out because there had been a fire set in one of the classrooms that looked like it had been a temporary homeless encampment. So, but that's been a few years. So,
and it was worse before, and it took community engagement and community, vocalization about the problem to make those things happen.
Yeah,
I was shout out to the South Eureka Neighborhood Alliance, SENA, and the great folks over there that are really doing that that on the ground work of like bringing things to the attention of the folks that need to hear about it.
Yeah, definitely. I reported on it a bit, and now it's been a long time, but I thought the last that the school board discussed it, I thought that they had decided for sure to sell it. I thought that was where they had left it, but I don't know.
That is my understanding as well.
Yeah.
If you look on the city school's website, there is a page about the campus. And you can kind of update that with their progress, but it also lists the rules for selling it. I do understand that they're definitely keeping Alice Burney and they're definitely keeping the sports fields.
Right.
So if they sell it, it would just be the little chunk that is the campus and the like parking lot next to it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. Thanks for bringing it up. I haven't thought about it in a long time.
Yeah.
Time for a follow-up. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just definitely a concern.
Yeah.
And an asset.
Mm-hmm. And an asset, exactly. Yeah. And we are experiencing a population surge, and it's going to be a population boom. I'll call that a prediction. Yeah. The last time that the wildfires ravaged up and down the coast, we got a population boom. Because everybody's like, oh, this place is damp. Yeah. We're gonna move somewhere damp.
Yeah.
For better or worse.
Right. And that kind of brings up a little bit too, I mean, do you think that a population bump is going to be what will really help Eureka moving forward, like with the pandemic and everything? I mean, I'm sure that's another big concern with people right now, just in general, is how, you know, the impacts that's having. How do you see Eureka recovering from this? Where do you think we need to focus our energy?
I think that there would be challenges with a bunch of people who could afford to move here. And that is that we are already in a crazy housing crunch. Finding housing around here, especially rental housing, is unbelievably dehumanizing process. And we need more affordable housing. And if a bunch of people move in with a lot more money than the locals, and you know, they're going to drive property values up. They're going to drive up housing prices. That's going to be part of what happens. So addressing that need, I know, is forefront in a lot of people's minds already. And it's going to need to happen so that we can then take full advantage or make full use of people that come moving into the area, because they're going to come in with money and they're going to come in possibly with telecommuting jobs. You're not sure yet. But just making sure that those, that we have ways to like capture that wealth and to engage those people so that we can address the needs of all the citizens of Eureka and make sure that we do just basically have enough housing. And there's lots of ways that we can go about that. Lots of great ideas out there on how to make that possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The other thing that we've been talking about, with, you know, now you joining the council, is that it seems like now the makeup of this council is very arts minded. I mean, we've definitely seen the council, going in the direction of being more progressive for a while, but, you know, we just have a lot of arts people, I think, like you were saying before, you're not, you know, there's other kinetics people on there. We have another ink people person, Leslie. And, you know, I just think it's kind of interesting what do you think that says about the identity of Eureka? You know, we were also, when we were talking to Scott also, you know, he mentioned that it really wasn't that long ago that we were, you know, a logging and fishing town. And then it seems like maybe Eureka's even been kind of searching for an identity since. And now in the last few years, it seems like there's been this big, a lot of focus on the arts and promoting that aspect of the city. I mean, I guess now I'm sort of lost in what my question is in this, but you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah, people want to present. Is it like, has Eureka found its identity now as an arts community? Does it?
Oh gosh, I hope so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you've seen this coming to fruition in the last couple of years. It's definitely been a lot longer than that people have been working on it. I know, because I was at the Ink People since 2005, and Libby Maynard was over there working behind the scenes to help make sure that the arts became part of the strategic plan for the city, and you know, wedged that in there. And then as it continues, I think that one of the big identifiers of Humboldt County outside this area, there's a couple things that Humboldt County is known for, and one of them, I'd say somewhere in the top five, maybe the top three, is the kinetic sculpture race. you know, and that combines, it combines art and like kooky fun community art activities with our glorious, beautiful backyard. So there's two wonderful reasons that people would come here, kayaking and hiking, you know, and then also this not just the event itself, but a community that would do that.
Yeah.
But no, on the city government side, having arts be part of our strategic plan, having arts be part of our local identity, it's just tapping into a wealth that we have. Extractive economies like fishing and logging have an expiration date. There's only so many trees. There's, you know, that's just like, that when you start that process, there is an end. There's no way to keep that totally sustainable at the way that it was being done. So we have to come up with an infinite resource. Fortunately, creativity is an infinite resource. Mm. And we have this situation that of being in between Portland and the Bay Area. You know, we have this beautiful bay. We're at a wonderful crossroads here. And that that means that people are naturally going to travel past us. And if there's a great reason to stop here, then because it's interesting, because there's something to watch, because there's something to do, because there's something great to eat, then all the better. I would rather have people come here and leave with a full belly and leave money than not come here and then all the trees go away.
Yeah. I mean, what would you say though to, you know, there's, it seems to me there's been a bubbling up of like old Eureka that is resistant to this culture shift in Eureka. I think to like the street art festival, for example, which
is that your resistance? Does somebody not like the street art festival?
Oh, absolutely.
Your project of being people.
Yeah. No, people. I think
there's always somebody.
People are scared by art, Katie. they have visions of, you know, again, like the railroad people that want the railroad to come back, and like all these, you know, what do you say to them to assure them that the city is going in a positive direction?
There's no going backwards, man. You just gotta move into the future and do the best you can with what you have. And, you know, what we have is a vibrant, creative, beautiful community. What we have is a great place to walk around and just exist. We don't have like a huge abundance of trees and things and fish that can be taken out of here and sold anymore. They're not there. We can't continue extracting coal when there isn't any, that we've just got to move forward with practicality, with pragmatism, and use what we've got.
Just, by the makeup of the council, as we said, being, now a lot of artsy people, that would seem to indicate that the voters of Eureka have given you a mandate to be creative and artsy. Do you have any specific projects you would like to see energy and resources devoted to make Eureka more colorful and wacky and fun and livable?
I don't know. Giant inflatable duck. No.
Yeah. Okay. Where would you put the duck, Katie?
No, Calgary's got it. No. Ozette, where is that duck? It's in Canada somewhere. Yeah, he's doing the best he can.
I don't know about this duck. I'll have to look up the duck, but
there's a duck in, there's a coastal town in Canada somewhere. He's, okay. I don't know. Anyway, yeah. They have a huge inflatable duck. It cruises around. It makes people happy. I think that, the city has done some really cool things that are like priming the pump or just kind of helping get something rolling with a minimal of money and a minimal of effort that then gets like taken on by the rest of the community. So just for example, the painted utility boxes. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that was a collaboration between the city and the Ink People. The Ink People applied for a California Arts Council grant. That grant came through with just a little bit of money, and that little bit of money paid for a human to have a job. So here we go, state money coming in. Now a local person has a job. Our state government has a job to offer a local person. That person's job was then to get businesses to sponsor the utility boxes. So now the businesses are paying for that. They're getting advertising out of it. Artists are getting jobs. The community is getting something which really got on everybody's radar real quick. Everybody loves utility boxes. If you go to the Ink People website, there's actually a map of all of them.
If you've ever been wondering, at the time that when I finished, there was 55 of them on there.
That's amazing.
But that sort of coordinating thing, you know, just clearing the path for creative things to happen. I know there's a lot of contention around our city's marketing firm, but I am in love with the stuff that they're doing. Like over one of my commutes, there's at Parson Park, there's a utility box that has these beautiful poppies on it, and it says, I love Eureka. And right next to there, they put a big orange hashtag resilient Eureka banner on the fence to the park. And just like the designer in me just really loves that the banner matches the box, like the color coordinate.
I drove past that and thought the same exact thing the other day. It was the first time I'd seen them both. And I was like, ooh, I like
that
this.
Works. Yeah.
So I think like aesthetics, we are hardwired to appreciate beauty. We are like our brains are made to feel comfortable and happy and better when our surroundings are beautiful. It can only help the community. And it's the sort of thing that lifts everybody up without even realizing it. And you're in this, you are more productive, you're happier, you're more peaceful. We are a more peaceful community and a better one because we all like feel a little bit better because things are prettier. You know, go through Henderson Center, you go through Old Town and the walls are covered in artwork. That's not a city program, but the city was definitely involved. The city had something to do with making sure that that was able to happen. And this cross-agency, cross-funder coordination is like a thing, it's a great strength that we have. So, no, I wouldn't have one specific art project that I would do, but I would definitely continue pushing to have the arts be an important part of our social and economic growth.
Yeah. We're getting near time, but as we mentioned, you've served as president of the Kinetic Universe, which oversees the Kinetic Grand Championship. Obviously, COVID killed Kinetics this year. What has to happen for the race to happen in 2021?
There was an event this year.
I'm sorry. Wait, no. killed was a strong word.
Something.
I apologize.
There was not a kinetic. There was not nothing.
Okay. Well,
what has to happen? Well, it's, you know, like most kinetic things, it's complicated and involves many dozens of people coordinating efforts. There's also some like coastal development stuff because the dune where Dead Man's Drop was recently sold. And when a property is sold, there's all these things that come up, you know, so,
I didn't even think about
that. No, there'll be additional permitting. Excuse me.
I hadn't thought about that. So that Dead Man's Drop is in what is known or what was known as the dog park, right?
It's the dog ranch. It's not a dog park. Yes. There's never been a dog park involved. Yeah.
Dog
the word dog is in there.
Yes.
But yeah, Dead Man's. So there'll be, you know, there's permits that'll have to happen. And we talked this year about how on earth do you get people to do that and do it in a way that's spread out? Even just a team, like even just one craft is going to be, you know, anywhere between 2 and 14 people all theoretically inside some kind of shell. Breathing really heavily for 3 days. So this year we decided that it was not going to be responsible to encourage tourists or crowds in any way.
Yeah.
Hopefully after by May of 2021, with more than a year of experience doing this, hopefully there'll be a way to encourage crowds without it being, and everybody will like have some better idea of how to do that safely.
Yeah.
It'll be a logistical challenge. Fortunately, the whole thing happens outdoors. I mean, besides the rutabaga ball and the award ceremony, every kinetic thing is outdoors. There's a lot of potential for being totally spread wide out, for sure.
So we could say up in the air at this point.
It is up.
As with most things kinetic.
Yeah.
Well, and I'd say as with most large public events, I mean, is North Country Fair going to happen like it has? Is the, you know, like... things that are ongoing, like the farmers market adapted very quickly, but these yearly events, like there's a whole book to rewrite. And now the Kinetic Race, just to throw this out there, is 17 events in 3 days across 5 municipalities. There's 30 permitting agencies. Okay. Yeah. So there's 27 insurable bodies. So like, it is very complicated. And the only reason that it happens is because everybody loves it. Yeah. If it wasn't like so deeply rooted in our culture and our like local identity, if I said to you today, I was like, hey, I want to get a bunch of crazy art people and put them on experimental craft that they made themselves and put them on public roads and on the 101. And then they're going to get in the bay and then we're going to throw them down some big sand dunes and some hills. And, yeah. and we're going to close down all these roads for 3 days across the whole county. And people are like, oh, you're crazy. That's absolutely insane. Fortunately, we're grandfathered. grandfathered in. People yeah. already know it can work. So we have that to lean on. Plus, you know, Kinetic Racers are an ornery bunch. If a whistle goes off somewhere, they're pedaling, they're going, they're strapping pontoons to something, they're going to do it.
I keep trying to think about what Hobart would have thought about the fact that there's so much kinetics energy represented on a city council. That seems like a pretty cool legacy of his.
Those two rutabaga queens, myself and Natalie, two ace pilots, myself and Kim Burgell, and then Leslie's been involved in a kinetic team before, yeah. I think.
She must have, right?
She must have. How could she not?
Yeah. Yeah. We told Scott that he better get ready to pedal.
Yeah.
all city council ace machine.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be great. Yeah. I like this. Yeah. Well, like you said, it's such a big part. It's such a big part of our culture now. You know, it makes sense that anybody who really loves Eureka and has been a part of it for a long time would have been involved in some way. And
funny side note, I was just finished recording a series for Heat TV, local PBS station, did an interview show with local artists. So I was one of the hosts, myself and David Fernie from the Arcata Playhouse. It was super duper fun. We got 26 different local artists and did these like in-depth interviews of them. We had this whole conversation at the beginning about the Ink People and kinetics. Cause it's like, if we talk to each artist about their involvement in everything, 3/4 of them are either going to be involved in the Ink People or involved in kinetics. And we only want to explain these things once to a national audience.
Yeah.
So we had to, wait, who are we going to talk about kinetics with? And who are we going to talk about Ink People with? And sort of like, you know, reined it in. So folks, lots of folks, like most of them being involved in kinetics, but only one or two of them actually got to talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Katie. It's been really fun to get to know you. This is my first time meeting you, which is kind of funny that it's in this way, but I know that we'll be definitely talking a lot in the future. It's been really fun to hear your story. And is there just anything else that you want to put out there? Any last words to your community?
I really want to lean on my history of connecting people with opportunities. I think that there's a lot of power in local government. The big national stuff takes up a lot of our mental time, but it's the local things and how they hit the ground that really affect our lives day to day when it comes to like how and where you can build up your housing, whether or not you can find a job, you know, how much your groceries are going to cost. Like these are things that happen on the local level. And I want to connect the people of the second ward with the power of their local government. So I want to be their voice. Let me be the conduit. Get in touch with me. And I will help coordinate, help hopefully make some things happen for our awesome little city.
Awesome. Right. Katie, thank you so much for Zooming with us.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. for listening, and thank you to Katie Moulton.
I learned a lot yeah. about Katie Moulton today.
Yeah, that was good.
She's done some very interesting stuff.
That's that. And humbled, be good. Remember to wear your masks and be safe out there. And be good to each other. Be good to each other.
Yeah. Let's make it through this winter, guys. Let's all do what we got to do. Humboldt is in the purple tier, so.
I never meant to cause you any trouble, Steph. I never meant to cause you any pain. But here we are. Okay, never mind.
All right,
we're delirious. It's Thanksgiving. Yeah, this is okay. Can we just go?
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Let's go. Bye. That's the worst thing ever.